Good morning, Prince George. This is Uncle Don coming at you with my 23rd show for the 27th of November, 2002. By golly, what a great time for cynics. I could fill an hour show easily with the crap that is coming down now. So Gordon Campbell came to UNBC last Thursday. Although his bodyguards kept him well away from students and non-VIPs, he got an earful from about 200 disgruntled citizens, mostly students. Uncle Don was there. We caught a fleeting glimpse of Campbell as he passed the windows in the Bentley Center before he disappeared. No one could disguise from him and his toadies that there was a sizable contingent up here that does not like him or his politics. We counted 7 cop cars on campus, and there may have been more. It would have been a great time to stick up a bank. Sorry you missed this one, Pat Wicks. If anyone's listening at the jail, please tell Pat that the Candyman says hello. The students were quite restrained, as were the police. I have to say nice things about the Mounties because my stepdaughter signed on to the force that morning. I've always been a bit paranoid about police surveillance, but now the buggers have infiltrated my family. But I digress. There was a dicey moment when some students pounded onto windows to attract attention, and I had visions of a scene like Concordia's recent dust-up. But all was well. Good show. Our leaders must be tamed. That was the headline of a comment piece by Mark Schachter in the Globe and Mail. He's now the Director of Governance and Corporate Responsibility at the Conference Board of Canada. Sounds important, doesn't it? Schachter says that we are suffering a failure of leadership in both the public and private sectors. No news here. What is news is that some people in high places are beginning to realize this fact. Governments and corporations have a feature in common. The owners select others to run the business and trust them to run these operations for their benefit. We all own governments through our citizenship and as taxpayers. We all have a larger or smaller stake in corporations, either directly or through employment or as members of a pension plan. Even Canada Pension now has a substantial ownership of corporations, as we have heard through the recent revelations that the Canada Pension Plan has lost $4 billion of our dollars in the latest stock market tumble. We've been steeped in the culture of the corporation. Corporations bring us shiny cars and our crunchy breakfast foods. They look after our welfare. They compete to bring us the goods that we want at the best prices possible. They provide us with jobs. Bullshit. Now with the revelations of BRIEX, Enron, WorldCom, Arthur Andersen, and all of the others involved in the ongoing corporate scandals, we're having a look at the inner workings of the huge corporations that dominate our economy. In theory, a corporation combines the money of many stockholders to finance a venture that will provide goods or services to customers. In the process, it makes a profit. The corporation has a board of directors which selects the executives and oversees their work. The corporation is run by executives who act on behalf of the stockholders, hiring the staff and investing the combined funds in a way that will achieve the goals of the organization most efficiently. In exchange for their services on behalf of the shareholders, these executives are rewarded with salaries and perquisites above and beyond the wages paid to their subordinates. The money earned by the corporation is returned to the shareholders as dividends or is reinvested in the corporation's assets. More bullshit. What has happened to the capitalist ideal here? Well, where do you want to start? Corporations are supposed to be providing us with the goods we want and need. Forget that. Corporations spend vast amounts to tell us what we want and need. They push new fashions and expensive frills that are supposed to differentiate their products from their competitors' stuff or service. Does anyone really believe that the new Ford has all of these great new features that make it better than a Chevrolet? The last real innovation in automobiles was the automatic transmission. The last time someone tried to make a solid, reliable people's car, it was Adolf Hitler. His creation outlived him, but it was squeezed out of the North American market by General Motors, which lobbied to have emissions measured in a way that Volkswagen could not meet with its air-cooled engine. Could you guess that I have owned two of the Volkswagen bugs? So we are stuck with the overpowered, overpriced, ugly Chevrolet. Is a new car worth $30,000? How much of that goes into annual style changes and advertising? Answer, plenty. Then there are 50 brands of candy-coated breakfast cereals brought to you by 3 huge conglomerates that spend massive amounts convincing you and your children that one brand is different from the others. It all comes out of your pocket at the till. Does this serve our needs? Corporations are controlled by boards of directors, which oversee the operations of the executives in the interests of the shareholders. Right. We've seen from these scandals that the members of the boards tend to give huge salaries, bonuses, and perks to the executives. These executives, in turn, are often on the boards of other corporations whose executives may be those same people who are on their boards. Everyone takes a turn at looting their corporation, and we all pick up the tab through higher prices for customers and decreased earnings for shareholders. We are all being milked by the corporate executives. Then there are governments. We supposedly elect the best citizens to represent our interests in Ottawa, Victoria, and Prince George City Hall. Does anyone really believe that these representatives are the best available? Our own federal Liberals have a great track record of taking care of their friends. Most recently, the Liberals have been found to have given fancy contracts to their supporters in Quebec to advertise the federal government at sporting and civic events. This was a blatant example of giving public money to those who support the party. And all political parties have done the same, taking care of their supporters first before looking after the public welfare. Our beloved provincial government are even more blatant in taking care of their supporters. This bunch cashed in on the public wrath with the NDP and their stupidities and put 76 out of our 79 MLAs in our parliament. The rich individuals and corporations who financed the Liberals did not have to wait long for their payoffs. The first day in office, the new government cut individual taxes by 25%, a massive windfall for the higher income individuals. This was followed by tax cuts for corporations. We are now seeing more payoffs as the corporations are being allowed to loot our resources. The government will now trust the logging companies to be nice to the forests. The Socreds tried this when they pulled the government scalers out of the woods and allowed the companies to measure the amount of wood taken. Suddenly, the amount reported dropped, and our stumpage revenues fell accordingly. Temptation overcame prudence, but the government of the day did not care. Watch for more horror stories of overcutting and waste in the woods. We are losing BC Hydro by degrees. Does it make any sense to split Hydro into two separate entities for any reason other than disposal, one piece at a time? Campbell denies this. He will retain the core assets in public hands. Do you have any idea what core assets are? Sure, so do I, and everyone has a different idea. This is another weasel term designed to cloud the issue and confuse enemies of this massive giveaway. Municipally, we have councillors and a mayor who voted to sell a gem of commercial property to a man who wants to build a gambling hall on the land. The mayor has said there is nothing wrong with this, as it will bring in more than $1 million over the assessed value of the land. I say this is no windfall. It indicates a faulty assessment of the land. Land in our economy is worth what you can get for it at a given time, no more and no less. The fact that a premium might be paid represents expectations of money that will be bilked from the foolish and the addicted who will drop their grocery money in this monstrosity. If you think that gambling is a great sport, go to bingo where you can lose your money more slowly. I seem to remember a time when gambling was lumped with prostitution and drugs as immoral. Well, first the true church found that they could suck bingo money from the gullible, and then governments followed suit. Strange the way moral values change. By the way, the fact that the bulk of the money for the past two campaigns of two of the political proponents of this gambling hall came from the man who was buying the land from the city is a coincidence. Would Uncle Don lie to you? As the man said in the article, there is nothing new about either governments or corporations acting against the best interests of their owners and supposed masters. What is new is that the public is beginning to realize the deviousness of both institutions at once. Maybe something good will come of this. I've hesitated to mention the Israeli-Palestine affairs. After all, I don't want to be considered a terrorist sympathizer, and that could happen no matter where I took a stand. But a photograph in a recent newspaper has swayed me to take sides. At the risk of dragging the University of Northern British Columbia into the situation of Concordia University, where freedom of speech on the issue had to be limited by court injunction, I will speak. I hope this will not force a situation where Sven Robinson has to come to Prince George to save my bacon. The photograph which has moved me shows an Israeli worker attempting to clear a path between Israeli settlements while two Palestinian boys mercilessly pummel him with rocks. I have to side with the unfortunate worker who is just trying to do his job while a couple of layabout kids harass him. The Israeli is very fortunate in this instance that he is protected by what appears to be an armored D9 cat. You cannot be too careful when there are armed kids around and you are tearing down a home in a refugee camp. According to the caption under the photo, The house is one that was thoughtlessly located right where the Israelis had to build a road. Just like a Palestinian to build a house there to provoke the Israelis. You cannot trust those Palestinians. Have you ever heard of the free speech movement? In the 60s, ancient history to most of you, the University of California at Berkeley, a state-supported university, had strict rules against politicking on their campus. No tables, no speeches, no tolerance. At that time, feelings were running very high against the Vietnam War, especially in hot spots like Berkeley. Just off the campus on Telegraph Avenue, there were always signs, tables, and speeches. One day, a group of activists challenged the ban on politics on campus by declaring Sproul Plaza, a central square on campus, to be a Hyde Park-style free speech area. They set up soap boxes in the plaza and mustered a huge demonstration. Campus police were overwhelmed and city police were called in. The cops had sympathy for the demonstrators who were, after all, exercising the rights of assembly and free speech on public property. Governor Ronald Reagan, yeah, that same bastard, called in the National Guard and there were pitched battles with students. When all the smoke cleared, the students of the free speech movement won the right to have their orators and tables and all the rest. From there, the movement spread to other colleges and universities across the United States. Now free speech on campuses in the U.S. and Canada is taken for granted. The University of Northern British Columbia allows free speech on campus. But there's a feeling lurking that this is not a right but a privilege. What would we all do if the administration tried to cut off political discourse at the university or the College of New Caledonia? The provincial minister of advanced indoctrination is trying to cut off student funding to campus groups like the Canadian Federation of Students, CFUR Radio, and the Public Interest Research Group for having the audacity to criticize the Campbell regime. Will the government pressure the administration of our institutions to strangle free speech? This was now happening at Concordia University. Behind the guise of preventing violence on campus, that university declared that the Israeli occupation of Palestine is a forbidden topic on campus. It is not right to stomp freedom of speech to prevent possible property damage. There are other ways. Universities and colleges should be the leading places where all topics are discussed freely. If not here, where? The violence and property damage at Concordia began when the administration invited Benjamin Netanyahu to speak on campus. I don't know for sure, but I suppose he was to be awarded an honorary doctorate, which is customary for visiting big shots. Netanyahu is a war criminal. Beyond the issue of Israel versus Palestine, Netanyahu is responsible for military actions that breach the United Nations Charter and the customary laws of warfare. How would we feel at UNBC if Henry Kissinger, the American war criminal, were invited to the Prince George to receive an honorary doctorate? I, for one, would be doing my damnedest to prevent it. The problem in Concordia is not with the students, but with the administration for their silly decision to invite this man to campus. Free speech is one thing, but bringing criminals to a public institution is another. Behind all of this public fuss, there is a deeper issue that drives it. Concordia is no longer totally publicly funded. It now relies on donations from corporations and alumni, and it must please these donors or be left in the lurch. Student rights are secondary to private funding. We mustn't bite the hand that feeds us. At UNBC, we also have a reliance on private corporations. Can it happen here? Think about this as you sit in the Canfor Theater or walk down the TELUS Student Services Street. If these institutions were fully publicly funded and business kept off campus, we might have free speech as a right, not a privilege. Then we would have only the liberal government to deal with, which is a different battle. 4 weeks from today is the 25th of December. Traditionally, this has been the day when Christmas is celebrated, but this year it is being moved up to Monday to give everyone a four-day holiday weekend. Your calendar may be in error since it was printed before the powers that be found that celebrating on the 25th would cause a conflict with my Uncle Don broadcast on that date. I have arranged to be at home on Christmas Day to celebrate the joy and greed of the season with my family, and something just had to give. Sorry if it screwed up your plans, but if they can move Easter all over the calendar, I don't see what's so sacred about the 25th of December for Christmas. According to the Americans, Canadians are a bunch of wimps. We're not going to send the flower of our youth to be shot up in bushes foreign adventures, so we are cowards. We don't protect our borders from terrorists, and we let anyone immigrate who can scratch up the one-way fare. Shame on us. Well, let's take a look at our history before sending Canada to stand in the corner. World War I started in 1914. Canada joined Britain in war that year. The United States sat back and profited by selling to both sides until 1917, when they finally got on board. They damn near missed the whole show. Not that World War I was anything to brag about. There were no real bad guys or good guys in that one. Just lots of mud, gas, horror, death, and waste. World War II was another matter. We had some real bad guys there, and Canada was right off the mark on that one in 1939. The Yanks held back until the end of 1941, when the Japanese stepped on their toes. They made a big deal about their invasion of Europe on D-Day. Meanwhile, the Russians defeated the Nazis at Stalingrad and were winning the war at the cost of tens of millions of their own citizens. Canada lost over $60,000 and 60,000 men in that first war and 40,000 in the second. Wimps? I don't think so. Now George, son of a Bush, has declared that the 19 men who went to their deaths in those stunts on the 11th of September last year were cowards. And the men who bravely fly the American bombers several kilometers above the range of anti-aircraft fire and rain death on Afghans only to go home to a hot meal afterward are heroes. Since World War II, the Americans have been great at pushing their weight around in smaller countries. The only one that put up a stiff resistance was Vietnam, a poor country that took 50,000 Americans to their graves in their attempt to expand the American empire. The Americans still beat their chests about their precious dead and missing, while the Vietnamese lost millions into the brutal war. The Americans, who love to glorify war, never had a bomb drop on their territory since the Civil War. They never lost a civilian at home. Yet they can be heroes with their high-tech toys that can destroy cities and massacre civilians from a distance. Canadians have joined wars that we perceive to have a purpose. Just because we will not help expand the American empire and die for oil for their damned SUVs does not make us wimps, nor should we be pushovers for the Americans. Let them kill and die for oil, and let us maintain our dignity and self-respect as a country. Today's advice from Uncle Don to the young: don't mess with the Secret Service. Behind this bit of advice lies a story. Surprised? In 1965, I was a student in Philadelphia. At that time, I attended a boat show in New York. I noticed very early that some people were walking around with $10 bills in their shirt pockets. I approached one person and asked who was giving away money. He showed me that this item, which looked like a Federal Reserve note, was actually an advertisement. Half of one side was a photograph of a 10, and the other half was an ad for a business. The back was blank. The photo had been altered so that none of the wording made any sense, but from a distance of a meter, one of these bills folded in half would fool anyone. I found the stall that was giving away these bills and talked to the proprietor. I got the name of the printer, and I wrote to him. I finally bought 5,000 of these bogus bills with nothing on the half that carried the ad, so I had the perfect prop for some serious practical jokes. I left folded bills under my coffee cups as tips, then watched as servers spotted them. $10 was a lot of money in those days, and the reactions were rewarding. I also dropped them down under sidewalk grates, and people would go to great efforts to fish them out. I tossed them onto subway tracks. Finally, I bundled them into hundreds and sold them to other students who also had dark senses of humor. Fast forward for a few weeks. My major was labor relations, and I was hoping to work for a labor union eventually. In the spring of my junior year, I made an appointment with someone in the AFL-CIO headquarters in Washington and took the train down for an interview. The interview was a fiasco also, but that's not part of the story. While walking around Washington, killing time, I passed the Treasury building. What a formidable edifice. I'll wager the Saudis couldn't knock this one down with a 747. I thought of my funny money and decided to check out what the Secret Service thought of it. The Secret Service is a branch of the Treasury that protects the currency from counterfeiters and protects the President. Those guys that surround Son of a Bush with the shades and the little thingies in their ears are Treasury agents. I guess he must be a national treasurer. Whoopee! One treasure you can bury again, but I digress yet again. I asked to speak with an agent. I was referred to a suit in a large desk in a monstrous room with a huge carpet in the form of a $100 bill. I handed the suit one of my bills and said that a guy gave it to me in a bar. Was it real? The suit looked at my paper, looked at me, and said, "Have a seat." Pause. This is counterfeit money. Now, tell me the whole story. Now, they say that when you find yourself in a hole, the first thing to do is stop digging. I opted to rise above my principles and tell the truth. I went through the story of the ad and the boat show, the deal with the printer and the 5,000 bills, now mostly gone all over the country. I'd mailed some bundles to people far and wide. A separate crime, I suppose. The suit advised me strongly to get them all back, and he referred me to the Treasury Department branch in Philadelphia. I was a bit shaken. I took all of my bills to the Philadelphia feds and went about finding all the ones that I had sold, giving back all of the money I had so cleverly made. There were two roommates in my dorm who had bought a couple of bundles, and they rejected my story and my offer. I warned them that I had to account for all of them, but they ignored me. I turned over the bills recovered and the names of the guys who had refused to return the bundles. These guys never said what happened. In fact, they never said another word to me and avoided me with great effort. The T-men must have laid some kind of heavy trip on them. I will reiterate my opening admonition. Don't mess with the Secret Service. I have a confession. I've been known to fabricate news, but this item is too weird to be make-believe. A coalition of American religious groups, including Christians and Jews, has formed a group called the National Religious Partnership for the Environment. They're planning to roll out a national advertising campaign with the tagline, "What Would Jesus Drive?" I would have thought this a hoax, but it was reported in the Wall Street Journal, a newspaper without a noticeable sense of humor. Although this might look like a Lexus advertisement in bad taste, it is actually an appeal to people to conserve resources by driving the most economical vehicles compatible with their needs. This coalition says that the Bible admonishes people to avoid gas guzzlers as they are contrary to the Christian moral teachings to protect people and the earth. This is an admirable goal, no doubt about it, but it begs some questions beyond the one of where the Jews in this coalition fit in. Perhaps the Jews are laying groundwork for the coming of the Messiah. For instance, who said Jesus would drive? If we were really concerned about the environment, he might take the bus when traveling or even ride a bicycle. If we pretend that Jesus were among us, I can picture him as a sort of a Jeep Cherokee kind of guy. No fancy stuff, but maybe a bug deflector. I don't want to get bogged down with arguing the kind of vehicle that he might or might not drive. If he did drive, would he put out $100 for a personalized license plate? This is the important question. I could imagine he would go for a plate reading "One God," or "The Man," or "Jesus One." I'm not a follower of the Bible, but I did go to Sunday school as a kid when the weather was bad enough. The Bible said that Jesus did drive. He drove the money changers out of the temple, but the make of the vehicle was not mentioned. Anyone for a research project on this one? From Jesus to Chretien. Now there's a leap. Prime Minister Chretien is taking heat from his buddy, Moron Bush, to spend more money on Canada's military machine. Defense Minister John McCallum, to his credit, has invited the United States to mind its own business. Although Canada spends only 1.1% of our gross domestic product on our armed forces, we ranked 6th among NATO countries in the absolute amount spent. This proves again there is a piece of wisdom that often repeated: figures don't lie, but liars figure. Statistics are only as good as the bases used and the assumptions made. I humbly suggest my own measure of our commitment to carrying the load of defense of NATO. Let us calculate our military expenditures as a percentage of net corporate income tax collected. I think such a measure might put us near the top of the list. With such a measure, we could argue that we are putting too much money into the military. Anyone who wants to increase our absolute spending would have to also argue that corporate income taxes would have to be increased to cover the expenditures. And I mean net corporate taxes, none of the weasel outs like deferred taxes or depreciation allowances. This would be a way to harness the corporations into paying their fair shares of defending their economy. And speaking of morons, the pressure is on our Prime Minister to fire his Director of Communications for making the offhand comment at the recent NATO meeting that George Bush is a moron. My first reaction was that Bush Light has finally had his cover blown. But then I thought a bit and decided that this judgment is unfair to morons. Most morons that I have observed are not devious, greedy, lying, murderous war criminals. To call Bush a moron is to absolve him of his crimes and faults by giving him a cover as a mental defective. To top this off, when the incident hit the proverbial fan, Chrétien was quoted as saying, "He's not a moron at all. He is a friend." I urge you to pause this picture and see if you can find the moron. Now, from Uncle Don's I Was Only Following Orders desk. Three terrorists have now been captured red-handed, sabotaging the defensive capabilities of the United States of America. Alert military authorities in Colorado caught the three after they had only been damaging a Minuteman missile silo for an hour. The saboteurs damaged the lid, control cables, and the tracks on which the lid to the missile silo rolls aside to prepare it for firing. Three sisters are facing penalties of 30 years in prison each and up to $25,000 fines for the crime of, quote, sabotage and malicious destruction of property of the United States, unquote. The order these three were following is called the Dominican Order. They are nuns of the order who claim that they were following the biblical prophecy of Isaiah, to wit, they shall beat their swords into plowshares. If these sisters are tried in open court, a procedure no longer required under Bush's new repressive legislation, we should hear more of this case. The sisters claim that their actions were justified by the Bible, a document which can be used to justify an awful lot of actions, but they hold that missiles themselves are illegal under various treaties and international laws. I looked up the 1968 Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. In that treaty, the nuclear powers of the time agreed to discontinue the nuclear arms race and to conduct negotiations in good faith to achieve nuclear disarmament. The nuclear powers at that time were the permanent members of the Security Council. One cannot stretch the definition of negotiations in good faith for a third of a century. They are all in violation of this treaty, and a good case can be made that the mere possession of such weapons is illegal for any state. If the weapons themselves are illegal, then attacking them in any way should be lauded and not punished. These nuns deserve medals, not jail sentences. Well, that's it all for today, the 27th of November, 2002. This is Uncle Don on CFUR Radio 88.7 in Prince George. Today's quotation is from William Meisner with advice for academics. If you steal from one author, it is plagiarism. If you steal from many, it's research. Adios, amigos.